නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear venerable brothers, Dhamma friends, as you know, we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta, very interesting and very profound sutta available in the Sutta Nipata. And there, actually, Buddha himself come to a kind of a decision where Buddha wants to give a deep, interesting Dhamma sermon. And he takes the topic like, in case that others would ask you, what is the purpose of this whole Dhamma? Or what is the aim of this? What is the target? So then Buddha says that you better answer like this. So here actually Buddha does not give just a single answer. Rather, he give here 16 answers. In this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, 16 answers are summarized. And one after the other, Buddha is explaining. So what is the aim? Those teachings that are wholesome, noble, emancipating, leading to enlightenment. So the question itself has certain amount of an indication that it leads to enlightenment and it is wholesome, it is noble. So if we are practicing such a teaching, so we also have to become noble. We also have to be utterly wholesome. And ultimately one has to be completely liberated, enlightened. Anyway, Buddha here give a more practical, practice-oriented answers. And here, all these answers are very much based upon mundane and supramundane approach. So there are two contemplations to each answer. So the first answer is with respect to the Four Noble Truths. The first contemplation consists of first two truths, the suffering and the cause of suffering. So that comes under the first contemplation. The second contemplation is the Nirodha Satcha, the cessation of suffering, and the Magga Satcha, that is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So that is the two contemplations that one may ultimately drill down, one may ultimately come to a very precise, very, we can say, kind of a summarized, concise kind of a contemplation after one's long vipassana practice. So that is a kind of a summary. It's a kind of a target. Ultimately, one would reach through one's practice. So this is one answer. Then Buddha tells, okay, we can give another answer. If someone is asking that what is your aim of the practice, and then we can give another answer that is with respect to the acquisition, so what we call as the upadhis. So upadhis are various. Actually, we can consider them as the five upadana kanda, the five clinging aggregates, those are also upadhi. And then various defilements, we can say, those are also upadhi. On the other hand, there are five cords of sensual pleasure, rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, pottabha. Those are the different things that we like to encounter, that is what we like to gratify our senses through. And those also become one upadhi. So all that have to be basically abandoned. All the attachment with respect to that have to be cut off. And however, the way that we are making a self, do some sort of a self-identification, that has to be abandoned. So that is the upadhi patinissaga. So the first contemplation is where Buddha mentioned suffering, whatever is arising, is happened because of these upadhis, these acquisitions. On the other hand, if we are able to abandon these acquisitions, then there is no more suffering. So those are the two contemplations. And that answer is basically related to the upadhis, the acquisitions. Then Buddha say, if someone asks, do you have another aim? Can you give another example? Can you give another answer? Then Buddha say, yes, we can give another answer. That is, the aim is to penetrate the whole ignorance and ultimately have complete wisdom. So all kind of suffering happens because of the ignorance. So that is the mundane side. And if we are able to cut off all that ignorance, so if we are able to come to a level where there is no ignorance at all, then there won't be any suffering. So that is the second contemplation. So that is with respect to the ignorance, Buddha has given a third answer. And the fourth answer, now Buddha say, if someone is asking, okay, can you give another aim? Can you define another aim? Buddha says, yes, we can give another aim. So all the suffering happens because of the volitional formations, volitional activities. Those are the sankharas. Yankinchi dukkhan sambhuti sabbam sankhara paccaya. Volitional formations are the main reason of suffering. And if we are able to abandon or calm down all the volitional formations, then there is no suffering. So one definition, one way of looking at Nibbana is Sabba Sankhara Samatha, stilling of all formations. So if one is able to still all formations, then there won't be any suffering. So that is the second contemplation. You can see that the first contemplation is always fairly talks about the suffering, the mundane side, and the second contemplation is a kind of a motivation towards the supramundane side. So these are all contemplations. That means once we are going through our practice, so ultimately one can end up with a very this kind of a very precise but very concise kind of a practice motto. So that's why sometimes we are telling, okay, let you be able to realize Four Noble Truths. So that is how we summarize the whole teaching to Four Noble Truths. So similarly here, not only the Four Noble Truths, but Buddha gives us various perspectives, how our practice could be summarized, how our practice could be kind of aimed, and ultimately once we reach there, how we need to further and further practice. And if we are able to further and further practice according to any of these 16 contemplations, Buddha says one would reach the complete liberation, that is, they become an arahant, or one can become a non-returner, an anagami. So you can see it is not a kind of a beginner's practice talking here. It is very much like a matured result that ultimately a yogi, a vipassana yogi, would summarize his whole practice, and based upon that he is further continuing. Ultimately he can reach those sublime results. So that is related to the volitional activities. Then Buddha asks, okay, if someone is asking, are there any other way that you can give a kind of a aim of the practice? Then Buddha says, yes, this is another answer. Whatever suffering happens, that is because of the consciousness. Now this consciousness is the conditioned consciousness, and which is basically tangled on name and form. You know that the name and form and consciousness are interrelated. Nama rupa and vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupang, nama rupa paccaya vijnana. They have a kind of an interrelationship, and so that is that particular consciousness, that conditioned consciousness, established consciousness, or fabricated, constructed consciousness is the cause of suffering. Then on the other hand, if we are able to completely abandon that kind of a conditioned consciousness, then there won't be any suffering. So that is the fifth aim that Buddha summarized in this particular sutta. Now actually we can go to the next one. So far we discuss all these five, and now we can go to the next one. So that is with respect to contact, passa. If someone is asking, do you have another aim? Can you explain another kind of aim of this practice? Then Buddha says, yes, we can give another perspective, another way of looking at it. So that is, yankinchi dukkhan sambhuti sabbang passa paccaya ayang ekanu passana. So whatever suffering originates, that is completely conditioned by contact. So contact is the main cause of suffering. And then if we are able to completely abandon that contact, passasa tveva asesa viraga nirodha natti dukkasa sambhavati. If we are able to abandon that contact, if we are able to say, we can say complete fading away of that contact, then if we are able to reach such kind of a state, then there won't be any suffering. So that is the topic now we need to discuss today. Now, in order to get into it, now we need to look at certain other suttas so that we can get a some sort of better understanding about this part. So contact. So what is contact? So a very good definition we can come across in the Madhupindika Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. So there, Venerable Mahakacchana is giving a detailed explanation about a brief teaching given by the Buddha, and he is explaining what is contact, how contact happens. Chakkuncaso paticca rupeca uppajjati chakku vinyanam tinnan sangati passo. Now one definition he is giving here is that the how chakku vinyana happens. So in order for the chakku vinyana to happen, the eye consciousness to happen, there are two causes, two ingredients are essential. So that is the eye, the other side is the form. Eye and the form have to be in line. Sometimes we call it line of sight. So then actually we can say that's a possibility of eye consciousness to arise. Actually there are other factors like your attention has to be there, the enough light, illumination has to be there. So those are also other causes. But here the main causes are the eye and the form. As a result of eye and the form, eye consciousness can happen. Now we can need to understand that eye consciousness is therefore dependent. So without eye, there can't be an eye consciousness. Without a functioning eye, there can't be any eye consciousness. Again, if there is no form, there can't be any eye consciousness. So basically, that consciousness and happen dependent on eye and the form. So that we need to first understand. And then when it happens again and again, interesting thing happens. So we perceive it like, okay, eye is one thing, form is another thing, and this contact basically happens because we consider that this eye consciousness is also another thing, rather than we recognize it as a dependently arisen fact, dependently arisen phenomena. We consider very much like it is another kind of a phenomena. So we take all three phenomena and ultimately we end up with something called passa, the contact. So let me explain it differently. Now, if you can remember last week discussion with respect to the consciousness, one important activity of the consciousness is the distinct recognition. As I have given you an example, suppose you are going to pick your child from the school. Assume that now the school is open and many children are coming out, and there are say 100 students. Among them you need to select your child, your daughter, your son. Now you can immediately recognize, oh, this is my son, oh, this is my daughter. So that is a distinct recognition that we can do. So that is one important function of the consciousness. When there are many things available, it can distinctly recognize, distinctly know, distinctly cognize one thing. So whatever the interested, whatever the important object, it can select. Now this division among many, you are now making one. So this division, this is my son, this is my daughter, actually has a certain amount of I also involved, person also involved. And there's a identification happens. So this happens not only in this kind of an example, even when you are tasting something. Say you are tasting some kind of a food. On such occasion, if it is bitter, you can recognize it. If it is tasty, you can recognize it. If it is salty, you can recognize it. So that kind of a distinct recognition is possible. So this distinct recognition itself is actually the function of consciousness. And we get to know, okay, there is a taste, there is a bitter taste, and there I am feeling it, I am tasting it. So that is the kind of a division ultimately we end up with. So there is a taste, and that taste is what I am experiencing now. So this is how we interpret it. Now taste is there, and the tongue is there, and this knowledge is there. So we feel that all these three are available. So now the contact has happened. So this is a kind of a condition process that we are talking, and it's a kind of a conventional thing that we are talking. So passa is possible, the contact is possible only when we are considering all these three are available. As that very distinction is the function of the consciousness. It's considering here I am tasting and there is a taste. Is this very distinction is the function of consciousness, but we completely miss that. We can't recognize the function of the consciousness, but we consider there are two ends. The one end is the tongue, the other end is the taste. But we don't know this complete cognition, how it is happened, the recognition, how it happens. So that is completely covered to us. That is covered because of the tanha, the craving. So this is well explained in the Majjhe Sutta. There are one explanation. So there's also, let me come to that first, Majjhe Sutta. In Majjhe Sutta, there is a question asked by certain monks. Yo bhante viditvana majje manta nalipati tambrumi mahapurisoti sodhani sibbani machagati. So this is the Majjhe Sutta explanation given and want to discuss by certain monks. So they want to know what is the answer given by the Buddha. So this is the answer given by the Buddha to one Brahmin. So having understood both ends, the wise one does not stick in the middle. I call him a great man. He has here transcended the seamstress. So this is the verse. It's a kind of a puzzle. So what are the two ends? What is the first end? What is the second end? And what is in the middle? And who is this seamstress? So this is the question that they had. So one person actually give us one answer with respect to, one monk actually give one answer with respect to contact. So that is what I have mentioned here. But another person, another monk give an answer with respect to internal sense basis and the external sense basis. That is what actually I want to highlight here. So internal sense basis. So that is the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. So those are the internal sense basis. So there are corresponding external objects. For the eye, it is the sight or the form. For the ear, it is the sound. So the nose, those are the odors. For the tongue, it is the taste. For the body, the tangibles. For the mind objects. So these are called the Dvadasayatana, the 12 ayatanas. The internal ayatana, the internal sense basis, and the corresponding external sense basis. And altogether we are called them as chapasayatana. So they are in always in contact. So therefore sometimes we summarize them as kind of a six pairs. Chapasayatana, six contact basis, we can say. Because contact is coming now in the function where eye and the form or eye and the sight, when it is available, as I mentioned, the eye consciousness happen, but the eye consciousness function is very much covered to us. We immediately see, okay, there is form, there is she, there is my daughter, there is my son, and she is there, I am here. Let me go to my daughter, or let me ask my son to come towards me. I am here. So we get this kind of an understanding, this kind of a perception. So I am here, he is there. So this very division is function of the consciousness. So that is very much unknown to us. So that is being hidden by the seamstress. Seamstress is nothing but the tanha, the craving. Say you are listening to some music. So it's a beautiful song. So you can perceive it like, okay, there is a beautiful song and I am hearing it here. While being here, I am hearing it. So the ear is there with me. I am the one hearing. Song is there. It is playing outside. So this is the kind of understanding we typically have. We completely forget this knowing part is the function of the consciousness. Here it is the ear consciousness. That ear consciousness function is not known to us because we are very much like ignorant. And that is actually happened because the seamstress, the tanha, the craving, actually do some sort of a combination, kind of a binding of the two ends. Two ends are myself, that my ear, and the other side is the sound. Sound and the ear are bound together, and we don't know about the function of the ear consciousness, and we think I am hearing or I am listening. So likewise, when we are talking contact, so this function is something we need to know. So whenever we are using our six senses, the function of the consciousness is very much like hidden to us. Because of the craving, we always get sort of attracted towards the form, attracted towards the sound, smells, taste, or the tangibles, or the mind objects, and we forget about how this function of the consciousness is going to happen. Now, in this Madhupindika Sutta, the same thing very much like explained, where how the eye consciousness happen as a result of the eye and the form. And when we consider all this together, when the eye consciousness is very much like unknown, but it is anyway available, it is happening internally, inside, even though it is not known to us. So this is now coming to a result called passa, the contact. And when contact is there, now feeling happens. When feeling is there, now there is a perception. Yang vedeti tam sanjanati. Now, when such kind of perception happen, then you are tempted to think about it. You want to think about it. And when thinking is now further and further supported, now it becomes ultimately thinking from many directions. And ultimately, you end up with overthinking, or what we call as conceptual proliferation. Now, here actually we need to understand, therefore, passa, the contact is one important cause for the feeling, passa paccha vedana. For all different kinds of feelings, passa, the contact is the cause. And all sorts of perceptions, passa is the cause, the contact is the cause. All sorts of thoughts, that means formations, sankhara, passa is the root cause. Contact is the root cause. You can see there are three aggregates here we are talking. The feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, and the formations aggregate. All those three aggregates are very much originated from the contact, from the passa. And on the other hand, here further explained in this Madhupindika Sutta, so vata uso chakkusming sati, rupe sati, chakku vinyane sati, passa panyatti, panya pesati iti, thanametam vijjati. So this is a passa panyatti. It is not a reality, but it's a passa panyatti. It's a kind of a conventional term. It's a mind-made one. Passa panyatti. It happens because of two, or rather three causes, because we can't really properly understand the function of the consciousness. It is anyway in operation. And we consider it as, I am here, object is there. So the possibility to contact is there. Now the contact is possible to happen. We can define something called contact. But the interesting thing is, as we discussed last week, so if we are developing wisdom, to that amount we can understand the function of the consciousness. Panya bhavetabba vinyanam parinyaya. You need to develop wisdom in order to fully understand the function of consciousness. So if we are able to develop more and more wisdom through vipassana practice, so that basically explore, or that basically reveals us the function of the consciousness. the ultimate result is even the pus starts kind of decaying, the contact starts decaying as a result of such a process. Because we are more and more recognizing the function of the consciousness, so that consciousness no more appear like a ingredient fact to make the contact. So ultimately contact also start disappearing, fading away. So same process actually. If we are working in some sort of a vipassana method, so we can say in one angle the consciousness, the conditioned consciousness is very much like revealed to us. It starts ceasing. On the other hand, we can say the result of those, that is the contact, the passa, also starts slowly fading away and ultimately cease. Now, in this Majjhe Sutta, there's another answer given by one senior monk. So, when someone is asking what are the two ends, what is the middle and who is the seamstress, he is giving an answer directly related to the passa, directly related to the contact. Passa ko auso eko anto. Contact friends is one end. Passa samudayo dutiyo anto. The arising of contact is the second end. Passa nirodo majje. The cessation of contact is in the middle. So always here, the middle is always we can't understand because of the function of seamstress, because of the function of the craving. We know only the two ends. So, say for example, this is not difficult to understand. Now, say for example, you are simply watching a movie. Now, there is the contact going on now. Contact is happening, you are watching a movie, and contact is constantly going on now. Now, suppose you feel little bored about it. Now, still the contact is happening, but you feel little bored. Now, you want to listen to some music. Now, the music is starting. So you are in one end, so that is in the, we can say the form side, the seeing side. That kind of passa is happening, what we call as chakku sampassa. On the other hand, now you are switching to something else, some another object, you want to see something different maybe. You want to switch to another channel, so that you can see some sports. Then you are switching to a new contact. Now new contact is now going to arise. Assume now you are watching the sports channel. Now you little feeling bored about it because your favorite group, favorite team is now losing. Now you feel not interested. You want to see something related to the nature, for example, something geographic, something that kind of a channel you want to see. Now you are switching to that channel. Now you start seeing that channel. Again, new samudaya, new contact is going to happen. So as you are continuing that, suppose it is also you feel bored. Now you want to listen to some music. So you are switching to another channel which is showing some songs. So likewise, we are jumping from contact to the arising of contact. We were in some sort of a contact. As we get bored, we are jumping to a new contact. So that is the new arising of contact. While we are there, we want to jump to another one. Another arising of contact. While we are there, we are jumping to another one. New arising of contact. So always we are jumping from this end to the other end. So very much like this is continuing. But how the cessation completely ceases, we never explore. We don't wait till the recent contact to cease. We don't wait. We quickly jump to a new one. Say for example, you are watching a movie. Now you know the end of the movie. Now you want to quickly switch to something else without seeing all the end of the movie. How ultimately the complete movie ends and how the names and the labels and the company and this and that, all the contributors, all that list is there. So you are not interested about that. You quickly jump to a new movie, you quickly jump to a new song, or you quickly jump to a new sport channel because that end is somewhat boring. Towards the end, you don't get kind of a passion. You don't get some sort of a lust. You don't get any kind of a delight. While seeing the end is very boring. So always this kind of a process is going on. Say you are in a, some sort of a relationship. So now as you feel that something is going to happen and I am coming to an end of relationship, so you don't wait till it ends and you suffer and kind of the consequences are being very much evident. Rather, before it ends, you may start another relationship. You have multiple relationships. So we don't explore the end of that relationship. So likewise, if we are considering our way of behavior, very much like we are jumping from one contact to another contact without thoroughly investigating the cessation of contact. Cessation of contact is not known to us. So that is a function of the seamstress, the craving. We are always craving is taking care of binding us to the contact and to a new contact. Contact and arising of a new contact. So that is the two ends that we are always jumping with. So this is a very interesting answer given by the venerables, and this is the answer actually Buddha also given to during that conversation between Tissamitteya in this Majjhe Sutta. And there's another area, so where Buddha explained how contact is happening. Dvayam bhikkhave paricca vinyana sambhoti. Similar thing actually he has repeated at another sutta, which is called Dutiya Dvayam Sutta. Because consciousness comes to be in dependence on dyad, two things. And how because does consciousness come to be? It depends on I and forms there arises I consciousness. So the I and the form are essential components, as we already discussed, for the arising of I consciousness. But the interesting point here, highlighted by the Buddha, is that the I is impermanent. It is changing, it is becoming otherwise. Similarly, forms are also impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. Chakku anicchang viparinami anyata bhavi. Rupa anicca viparinami no anyata bhavi no. So that means the causes, the two causes are impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. So can you say the two if the two causes are completely impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise, how about the result? So what is the result? The result is the I consciousness. Then this I consciousness also have to be impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. So this is the important point that Buddha wants to highlight. The cause and the condition for the arising of I consciousness is also impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. Then how come the consciousness to be permanent? It also can't be permanent. It is also impermanent, inconstant, or changing and becoming otherwise. Because the ingredient are, the causes are impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. So the result, I consciousness, is also impermanent, changing, and becoming otherwise. So this is an interesting theory that Buddha pointing out. And when these three are working together, now the contact going to happen. Chakku sampassa going to happen. Yako bhikkave ime sam tinnang dhammanam sangati sannipato samavayo ayam vacchati chakku sampasso. Now Buddha give a kind of a definition here how the chakku sampassa happen. There Buddha highlights the meeting, the encounter, the concurrence of these three things is called eye contact. But as you know, all these three are impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. So the obvious result is that the contact also going to be impermanent, changing and becoming something else. So therefore, whatever arisen because of contact, say you are feeling some kind of a pleasurable feeling, it happens because of the contact, then how about the situation of the feeling? That is also going to be impermanent, changing and becoming something else. How about a perception? Various kind of sanya. That is also happened because of contact. Contact is impermanent, changing and suffering, changing and say becoming otherwise. So the resultant perception also changing, impermanent, and becoming something else. And various thoughts, various kinds of overthinking, various kinds of proliferation, various kinds of imaginations, various kinds of bodily activities, various kinds of mental activities, various kinds of verbal activities. All we can summarize as sankharas, but the root cause of sankhara is the passa, the contact, which is impermanent. So that indicates that the sankharas are inevitably, definitely impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. So this is a very interesting sutta Buddha highlights. So what is the end that we need to reach? The end is that we need to go through certain amount of vipassana practice. Ultimately, even though we see things, really there is no continuation of eye consciousness. That conditioned consciousness may not going to happen. Even though we can hear things, conditioned consciousness, the ear consciousness, may not going to happen. Even though we taste things, still a conditioned, established consciousness not going to happen. If we are able to do something like that, then that means the contact not going to happen. So this is a very deep point. We already discussed about the consciousness last week. Probably that would be helpful for you to understand what we are talking today. So in order to avoid contact to happen, then there should be a method to overcome the causes. One cause is the consciousness. This consciousness has to be abandoned. This conditioned consciousness, the established consciousness, if it is not available, then the contact also not going to happen. This is the essential component is not there. Contact is also not going to happen. So the interesting phenomena here is the eye is available, but the rupa sanya is fading away. You are not distinctly knowing something. It's very much like you are seeing the big picture, but you are not interested of seeing one particular object. You are very much like seeing some kind of an overview, kind of a pervaded view is available, open view is available, but your attention is not particularly focused onto one thing. So as a result of that, what you have is a kind of a pervaded view, kind of a faded away kind of a view, where your attention is not particularly focused onto one thing. Chakkuncha nirujyati rupa sanyacha virajyati. So here the term actually has to be virajyati. So whatever the signs, stains, various mental images appeared in you, all starts fading away, becoming blurred, and the typical function of eye is very much like stopped. The typical function of eye is ultimately make us to kind of think about it. Say for example, we are seeing something. So the very subtle function of the eye is the mere seeing. But we can't stop at mere seeing. So as a result of the eye, we start too much looking at it. We getting closer. We do a close inspection. We start thinking about it. We start taking a photograph of it. So there are many functions going on. Suppose you are listening to some music. You can't simply merely listen it. Rather, you want to closely hear it. You want to memorize the words. You want to utter those words. You are enjoying it. You sometimes even make certain sounds according to that song. And you are enjoying it thoroughly. Maybe you are recording it. You are thinking about it. You are trying to relate that song with your own life. Certain past incidents. So there are many things going on. We can't simply merely listen. So the function of ear is not merely to listen, but even to go on for a proliferation. It has become an ayatana, it has become a kind of a situation where many, many things are very much like originated based on that very simple activity of hearing. But now, as a result of the vipassana practice, if we are able to minimize this whole process to just mere listening, that means the typical ear's function is very much like stopped. Mere listening is happening, but the typical growing part, difficult, typical elaborations, typical thinking, typical overthinking, typical conceptual proliferation, inner chatter, none of them are going to happen. If such is available, then you are in a different kind of a mood, we can say. And Buddha has given it as a different name, where the typical activity of these ayatanas are very much like ceased. Eye is there, form is there, but you are not getting to any kind of resultant activities. Resultant activities are very much, as I explained, maybe thinking, maybe imagining, maybe doing further and further constructions, maybe doing further and further, say, fabrications, conceptual proliferation. So all these are additional activities, mind-made activities, so our involvement into the picture. But now none of them are happening. It's very much like the contact has stopped, contact has ceased. Six sense bases or the 12 sense bases are very much like stopped, ceased. Actually, it may not happen in a, it may only happen to some extent while your eyes are open, ears are very much open. But in deep meditation, there may be a situation where all that is completely cut off. So this is what sometimes called as Salayatana Nirodha, where the Nibbana, where all the contact is completely ceased. On such situation, there is no any kind of a suffering. And the answer to the Bahya, Ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati, is a practice-oriented answer, a restrainment. Buddha is advising to Venerable Bahya, where we need to restrain ourselves, even though we see things, just stop at seeing. Even though we hear things, just stop at hearing. Even though we taste, smell, or touch certain things, we stop at mere that sensation. Even though mental objects, maybe thoughts, come into the mind, we simply cognize it, that's it. No more further functioning. No more overthinking. No more thought generation. If such is possible, that's a restrainment which may lead us to this sort of complete cessation of the six senses. So if we are able to do that Bahya's restraint, so that means we are not promoting the eye consciousness, we are not promoting the ear consciousness, that kind of a established consciousness, conditioned consciousness, very much like mere seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, that is happening. And there is no huge possibility for the contact. Contact has very much like stopped. Further perceptions are not arising. Further thinking is not happening. And not much feelings are there. You may be in a kind of a bored state. You may be in a somewhat equanimous state. There is no much big pleasure as such available because you are not fabricating the situation. Say for example, you are seeing a beautiful sight. You are simply seeing it. Other than that, there is no proliferation. You are not adding anything onto it. if your own additions are not happening, if your own likes and dislikes are not mixing into the picture, you are merely seeing it without any kind of a fabrication. So the fabrications are stopped. No new perceptions are arising. Perceptions are stopped. And there won't be a big, pleasurable feeling, even though the sight is beautiful, that is also very much like stopped. So the results of the contact, that is the feeling, perceptions, formations, are very much like absent as a result of this kind of a practice. So now we can go to this sutta's part. Now typically, tesam passa paretanam, in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, now Buddha summarizes the function of the contact. Tesam passa paretanam bhavasotanusarinam kummanga patipannanam ara sanyojanakkayo. So Buddha mentioned, so those afflicted by contact, flowing along with the stream of existence, have entered upon a deviant path. The destruction of the fetters is far from them. And they are growing the fetters because they are very much like afflicted by the contact. They want to go through some sort of a contact. They are enjoying the contact. They are encouraging the contact. So they are in a wrong path. Ultimately, the end result is that they are end up with many, many defilements. Their latent tendencies are further grown. So the opposite is yacha passang parinyaya anyaya upasame rata teve passabi samaya nichata parinibbuta. But those who have fully understood contact, who having known it, delight in peace, by breaking through contact, hungerless, are fully quenched. So basically Buddha mentioned, if one is able to understand the function of contact, and then what happens is they are more interested in the peace, not in the contact, but very much like a peace, as we just discussed with the example of Venerable Bahir, ditte ditta mattan sute sutta mattan. So like that, so seeing is there, but the mind is peaceful. You are not entangled with what you are seeing. You are not excited with what you are seeing. Or you are not disturbed with what you are seeing. Rather, you are maintaining that very equanimous peace of the mind. You may hear various sounds, but your mind is not entangled with those sounds. You are not excited by those sounds, or you are not sorrowed, disturbed by those sounds, but mind remains calm in the peace. Similarly, the taste, similarly the smells, similarly the tangibles, even though you may experience them, but the mind remains peaceful. Thoughts may happen, but you are not interested in thinking. Thoughts come and go, but you are not participating in thinking. So you are remain peaceful. Mind remains peaceful. Simple as that. So if you are able to do that, so that means anyaya upasamerata. So you are more delight in the peace. You encourage peace in the mind, calmness in the mind, uninvolved nature of the mind, undisturbed nature of the mind. So that is your encouragement. So as a result of that, what happens? Teve passabi samaya. So you are breaking through the contact. And as a result of that, nichata. So you are now losing the interest in a way. You are now no more interest much about the songs. You are no more much interested about the forms. Not much interested about the tastes. Not much interested about various smells. Not much interested about various tangibles or even thoughts. So you are very much like allowing to fade away the craving. So nichata means there is no icha, there is no craving, there is no tanha, there is no desire for all these five contacts, all these five sensual cords, sight, sound, smells, tastes, tangibles. Particularly for them, there is no much contact, there is no much interest, there is no much desire. You simply very much like prefer peace than getting excited by those. And what happens? The result is ultimately you quenched. All the desires are faded away. You are not trying to promote desires, or you are not trying to gratify desires, satisfy desires. Rather, you are simply letting go of desires. You are abandoning desires. The tanha, the craving, is slowly, slowly reduced, and may be a situation that ultimately the completely tanha is reduced or disappeared or quenched. Nichata parinibbuta. So one becomes completely ceased, attainable on the other hand. So that is the end of this part, where Buddha mentioned all the different kinds of suffering happens because of contact. But if you are able to cease this contact, then there is no more suffering. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. So if you have any question, please feel free to ask. Any question from your side, Shalika?
Yes, I think I would like to invite Nandana to present your question.
Yes, Bhante, can
yes?
you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Bhante, thank you for the teachings today. I think we talked about the consciousness, and now we come to a contact. I think today's teachings, like, it makes sense to me how there's a form, and then talking about just the eye consciousness. So there's form, and then because of the eye consciousness, eye consciousness arises, and then arises passa, the contact, and from contact you went on to explain how there is sanya, then there is sanskara, like, you know, proliferations and all those things. So it is kind of I can understand it, maybe not fully, but I can understand logically how it could happen, and, you know, how one can experience this process. My question is, Bhante, now, according to Paticca Samuppada, the 12 links, mm-hmm. the way they that is listed,
mm-hmm.
it says, sanskara paccaya vinyan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, now, today's discussion, you are, how vijnana arises, so dependent on, you know, seeing something or hearing something or whatever, the consciousness arises, the vijnana arises, and then later on, after, you know, passa and then stanya and all those processes, mental processes, go or proceed in a certain direction, only after that sanskara are formulated. But in the Paticca Samuppada, it is said, for the consciousness to arise, it arises from sanskara, from mental proliferations.
No. No, you can't say it is the... Yeah. So basically, the main question is, the sankhara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupa. So that is one end,
yeah.
that you are referring. The other end is,
yes.
that the we mentioned already, passapaccaya vedana, passapaccaya sanya, passapaccaya sankhara. So how this can be sort of happen. Now basically,
right.
in the sankhara paccaya vijnana, so there are one sankhara, the gross form of sankhara is very much like say we know that there are various bodily activities, verbal activities, mental activities, So those are the gross kind of sankhara we are talking. But the very tendency available in the mind is to do some kind of a abrogation. So there's a kind of a tendency is there. Suppose there is a little sign appear in your mind, you have a tendency to add a label to it. There's a tendency to recognize it and give a name to it. Oh, this is my son. Oh, this is my mother. Oh, this is my father. So likewise, so we are immediately attributing a person to it. We are personifying that little image. And then we have our likes and dislikes with respect to that person. Now we are incorporating all those likes and dislikes also into this experience. We are now adding that experience into the picture. Now when that is there, further we want to think about him. Now the experience has generated a person. Now I want to think about that person. Now slowly I am thinking about, and ultimately I get entangled with complete conceptual proliferation. Now you can see that the very early stage, there's a tendency in the mind to proliferate, or there's a tendency in the mind to fabricate. We can't simply merely keep it as it is. So as we are talking, this tendency, so till this tendency is available, so there's a possibility of consciousness to establish, because we do all this weaving part, we do all this fabrication part, either thinking further about it or filling our mind with various perceptions. So ultimately the consciousness has a very good footing to establish. There's a very good house to stay. But the moment we have more and more wisdom, rather than proliferating, rather than sort of fabricating, rather than allowing the mind to do various constructions, we keep the mind very quiet. We keep the mind very, you know, silent, doing without any kind of a fabrication, but not yet talking about the proliferation, but the mere fabrication is also very much like stopped. Sabba sankhara samatha means not that we are trying to only stop conceptual proliferation, overthinking, rather even keeping the mind as it is, not adding anything into the picture. Seeing, just merely seeing, you are not coloring it. You are not adding your own stuff into the picture. Hearing is there, but you are not adding your own likes and dislikes into the picture. You are not adding your own biased perceptions or your own prejudices, your whatever the cultural upbringing and cultural influences into that experience. You are simply going through experience as it is. So that is the level of sankhara, we can say, very subtle, available, happening, functioning in our mind. So that is happens because of the ignorance. We have certain amount of ignorance that promotes that sort of a tendency in the mind. So when that tendency is there, so ultimately the consciousness has a very good house, has a very good establishment. And now it is completely get entangled with the name and form. Now, as a result of that, now you can't keep the body as it is. Now you want to get up, you want to walk, you want to hit someone, you want to open the fridge, you want to eat something, you want to watch a movie. Now the six senses are in full operation. Now it's the gross level.
So, Bhante, are you saying that... excuse me. Mm. Are you saying that sanskara operates at two levels?
Exactly.
One is where there is the tendency, mm-hmm. Or like the initial tendency of the sanskara that gives rise to the consciousness, the being. Mm. And then there is a grosser form of sanskara that would follow this process of contact.
Mm-hmm.
Sanya and all that, right?
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Tendency is, maybe we can say, we are using throughout this whole process. Now say for example, now you get up and you go to the fridge and you open it and you see something, and now you want to get an ice cream, Now you are tasting it. Now the eye contact has happened. Now the touching, the body contact has happened. Now you are eating it. The tongue contact has also happened. Now there's a very good feeling. A pleasurable feeling is there. Now you are even adding to that feeling. Oh, this is very beautiful. I mean, really tasty. I better eat it by myself before my so-and-so comes. I want to have more. I am putting another cup. So likewise, you do further additions, further fabrications you do even. You may even close your eyes and enjoy it, being in a very beautiful, fantastic, imaginary world. Because so beautiful, wonderful experience it is. Now you are reborn. Okay. You are reborn to a new state. It's all there. We can see. So there's a huge amount of fabrication is involved. So, but the very fundamental fabrication happens at the very early stage, where as a result of ignorance, we have this tendency to fabricate. When we have that, so the consciousness and the name and form get entangled. So we do that fabrication.
Right. So.
Yeah.
So Bhante, is it correct? Make sure that I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So sanskara that operated at two levels here, mm-hmm. subtler and grosser level.
Mm-hmm.
So is it correct to say if we put this today's teaching into Paticchasamuppada, and then is it correct to say in the Paticchasamuppada itself there is sanskara as a result of which arises consciousness, that is the subtler tendency that you explain,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a sanskara appears again then later in the Paticchasamuppada under name and form, because name consists, one of the elements of name is sanskara, right?
No, they are actually, we can't come to that. Name and form, that subtle definition is Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. So that is very, very fundamental kind of Passa.
Okay.
But we are talking about the six sense basis level, so that is more grosser kind of Passa. You know that the eye in contact with some form, ear with contact with sound, smell, taste, touch, that's a more grosser kind of a Passa we are talking. But at the name and form level, Namarupa level, Namarupa Paccaya Vinyanam, they are that Nama consists of five factors, Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. Passa is there, but that is very much the very subtle kind of a Passa we are talking.
Okay, so that sanskara does not arise there under name there.
We can't say so. There may be a very subtle intention involved. That's why Vedana, Sanya, Chetana. So this is a combination of very few mental factors. Vedana, the feeling is there. Sanya, the perception is there. Chetana, the volition is there. Passa, the contact is there. Manasikara, the intention is there. So this is a very subtle mental, say, factors of their very, very, subtle level available there.
Okay, sanskara that is referred to in Paticchasamuppada,
mm-hmm.
it is then essentially something that happened in the past, right?
In the past?
Yes. Because if not for, like, for example, if we are trying to relate it to an experience that mm-hmm. we are having, like, for example, eye consciousness arising.
Hmm.
Now, that is the present. We are, let's say, if you are taking that as an example. So, if that is what we are experiencing, then sanskara in relation to that experience, that I am seeing something now.
Mm-hmm.
So, sanskara was something that was in the past, which gave rise to my consciousness now, when I see something. I mean, is it something that operates at the same time? Because when I see something, eye consciousness arises.
Yeah.
So is sanskara operating at that same time, or is it something that was there in the past, or, you know, something that operated or that came into being before the consciousness.
No, I don't think that we have to take it is coming from a past life.
It's very difficult for me. So, what I'm trying to understand is, Bhante, sanskara.
Yeah.
Is sanskara, because in the Patichasamupada it says sankara paccaya vinyana.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
yeah.
If I'm seeing something now, I have eye consciousness arising in me as a result of, you know, when I see the form, and then eye consciousness arises. So, but eye consciousness cannot be there. Eye consciousness is there only because there was sanskara, right?
That's what I feel that the sankhara, one terminology we need to understand here is that the fabrication, the activity of the fabrication, the tendency to fabricate available in the mind. It is not that available sankhara we are talking, but rather there's a tendency available in the mind that has a habitual tendency available in the mind. We can't just keep the mind peaceful. We can't just keep the mind calm, relaxed. But there's a tendency to do something. There's a tendency to operate. There's a tendency to do, function, manipulate, change, add, multiply. So those are the kind of active participation that we always want to get involved. So that tendency is available in the mind. So that is happening because of the ignorance. And that gives a very good, foundation, motivation for the consciousness to get entangled with the name and form. Because assume that there's what we encounter is merely a simple image, a mental image. So we simply don't allow it to simply fade it away, simply erase from the mind. Rather, that tendency, the working out tendency, the doing tendency, fabrication tendency available in the mind, quickly jump and quickly we want to manipulate, we want to color it, we want to attach to it, we want to add a label to it, we want to magnify it, we want to attach several more labels into it, we want to add something coming from the past, something from the future, from our own prejudices. Now all that weaving happens because of that tendency. Now this weaving has ended up with many, many sankharas. Those are the resultant sankharas, we can say. But the inherent tendencies are already available in the mind, we can say.
I think that's what I was trying to understand. So, so the tendency is a result of past life, so this life's conditioning, prior conditioning.
We can say like that, yes. I mean, there's a preconditioning the mind is already conditioned, programmed, colored by these tendencies available in the mind.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I took long time.
It's okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Very interesting question, actually, what we discussed today and maybe even the last week is fairly profound, and we can't immediately understand it, even though sometimes we practice vipassana. Sometimes we can't understand all these subtle operations happening in the mind. So Buddha's teaching help us to somewhat clarify these things. Even though I am teaching you, I can't say that I am also 100% clarified with all this. I am also referring to books. I am also reading the suttas and trying to do own investigation. So that is how we are learning. So that's why we are discussing also. So slowly. But anyway, Buddha give us some kind of explanation. Okay, this is how it is happening. This is how it is happening. So according to that line, we also can little experiment and check whether it is really correct. But the interesting ultimate result has to be that the calming down of proliferation, calming down of all the mental formations, and calming down of all the formations, sabba sankhara samatha. So ultimately, even there is no contact. But it doesn't mean that we have died. We have become completely deaf or blind. All the faculties are in operation, but mind is at peace.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite Gishan to present his question.
Okay. Saranai Swamin answer. Today's discussion I have heard before as well, and one of the things that I always struggle when we talk about the ignorance, you know, how to conquer the ignorance, it is not, the way I'm understanding it, is not merely to learn more, to conquer the ignorance in this is not knowing the right right information per se, to seek the truth, I guess. Would you be kind to elaborate on that, how to sort of conquer, because I think that is one of the reasons why we sort of tend to get entangled in this world, in the samsaric journey. Thank you.
Yeah, that's why the ignorance, as we discussed during one previous occasion, different definitions are there. One would say the ignorance is that we don't have enough understanding about the Four Noble Truths. So that is one explanation. What is that? What is the ignorance? Another definition is that we don't have thorough understanding about the five clinging aggregates. We don't know, we don't have any thorough understanding about the form aggregate, or the feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, or the consciousness aggregate. So that is also an ignorance. So the vipassana practice is actually to thoroughly understand all these. Thoroughly understand this body, the form aggregate altogether, and different kinds of feelings, perceptions, how the formations are happening, and what are the formations, what are the intentions, and how the consciousness is functioning. Now all that is a development of wisdom. The more we do vipassana, more we practice inner contemplations or investigations, more and more would be the understanding. So that means lesser would be the ignorance. We have more understanding. So the more we understand, the beauty of this understanding is that the mental formations calm down, proliferation stops, mind becomes peaceful, and it becomes detached, dispassionate, and ultimately liberate without associating anything in the world. So that is the beauty of this kind of a teaching, the beauty of this kind of an understanding. Now rather than, say for example, if we consider the mundane kind of a education, say we are learning at a university, we are learning at a school, so we are gathering a lot of information, we are gathering a lot of knowledge, but that knowledge does not lead us to a opening of the mind, or liberation of the mind, or freedom of the mind. Rather, we create a self, we start too much thinking, we start pondering, maybe fabrication, constructions, proliferations, we want to show off, I want to become an individual, I want to become a special person. So ultimately end up with a lot of entanglements to being up as an individual. And I want to have everything for myself. I want to defeat the others. So this is the kind of end result of that kind of a knowledge. But here the Buddha encourages this kind of a knowledge, the insight practice, the vipassana knowledge, just the opposite to the mind. Rather than holding, it simply give up. Rather than attaching, it simply detach. Rather than becoming passionate, it becomes dispassionate. Rather than holding, it simply, you know, relinquish. Rather than getting entangled, your mind become fairly released. Rather than getting crowded, the mind become more clear. Rather than become, say, congested, or the mind become constricted, mind become quite open as a result of the practice. And rather than becoming burdened and heavy, instead the proper practice leads us to a very, you know, soft, open, very lighter kind of a mind, without any stress, without any tension, and basically without any attachment, it gets completely freed. So the freedom is the result of this kind of a proper knowledge, the insight, where the Buddha's teaching is leading us. So that is the kind of vijja, that is the kind of proper understanding, what we are talking, what we are aiming at. So then we can say we don't have much avijja, we don't have much ignorance, instead we have some understanding. As a result of that, mind has become fairly peaceful.
Very good, thank you. I think the way that I understood with your explanation, to apply Paticca Samuppada, or for each of these events that happening in your mind, and also in during this meditational aspect of just to sort of see how to break into certain segments in our mind itself, to without to get even lesser attached, or it will automatically happens within us when you see into that analysis within us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what I'm kind of understand in a simpler way.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, it's a kind of a gradual understanding. We can't say that we can immediately have total understanding. Slowly, slowly, we are understanding certain, you know, hidden parts, hidden operations available in the mind, and so that we are clear about it. And if it is kind of a foolish activity, we can avoid that. So likewise, we are kind of doing or going through a self-correction process or kind of a purification process.
As what you said just now, you have to have a strict discipline too, in order to sort of get into this. You'll always have, at one time you might practice the vipassana, the next moment you have been invited for a gathering, and then you lose it. So certain tendencies to sort of be with the crowd, and you may want to sort of restrict and try to keep during your training purposes, during your training time, with certain type of restraints, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, that one's all right.
Radhika, please present your question.
Thank you, Shalika. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
First, I want to thank you for the very practical way you did the talk today. Because, like Gesham said, I really experienced this in the last month, because I was away at a retreat in California, and we drove there, so there was such a big difference between my mind and how I let go of objects, contact at the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And the time of driving between Canada and California, because during that time I didn't have the structure of the retreat. I didn't have the teachers, the monks with me. I didn't have the supporting Dhamma friends. And we were traveling, and it was more like a vacation, going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So he's absolutely right. We had to be extremely disciplined
mm-hmm.
when we go back into our lay life.
Mm-hmm.
Today, so thank you, because it really applied to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can see how easy it is to, not how easy, but how much is more easy it is in a retreat atmosphere
mm-hmm.
to do what you are saying we should be doing.
Correct.
My question today is about the your explanation about how the two-step process of how first the vijnana is made, not made, arises when the I and the object come together, and then all three, the I, the object, external object, and the vijnana, the chakku vijnana, come together to form the mind, the chitta, and the chitta then has all the components of it, but then we take the one that is most prominent, or the one that is giving the next, that you're trying to explain. In this case, it was the formations or the sankhara, and it was very clear to me. So my question is, always the outside external object and the internal object, that is the I and the form, is made out of rupa. Same way the ear and the sound, shabda rupa, is made of the rupa. So that means the five sense organs and their objects, the external objects, as rupa with the satra mahadhatu. Now the manayatana is also a faculty, the faculty of the mind, just like the faculty of the eye, the nose, the ear, and the external object for the manayatana are these aramunas, whatever, that we have taken in by the five sense objects. So it is, I don't know how to use the word, but it's right to say the image, or it's being nourished by the whatever we see, the object that we take into through our eyes, the ear, and so on and so forth. So would it be right if I said that extending the way the five senses operate, that the manayatana and the shabda rupa or the chakku rupa or whatever the image that makes contact and it feeds on, that those two also have to be rupa and have to be made of the satra mahadhatu. In other words, that the manayatana, just like the internal object of the eye, is also rupa, and the form, whether it is the form of sound or the scene, which is just the image and the color, that is nourishing. That is the one that is coming and contacting with the manayatana and making the vijnana, the mano vijnana, and the three come together, and then knowing or identification occur. It will be right if I said that the manayatana and the image, the external object for the manayatana, is also rupa and made of the satra mahadhatu. Would that be right?
Actually, the function of manayatana is somewhat complicated. So the special function to manayatana is that it can work out with all kinds of objects. Typically, we can say...
Yes, all five types.
Yeah, that's the thing. Now, typically, if we consider the eye, so the eye only can operate with the forms. If we consider ear, it only operates with the sounds. If we consider nose, it only operates with the... what we call this... smells. Likewise, if we consider tongue, it only operates with the tastes, and body only with the tangibles. But if we consider the manayatana, it can work with the mental objects as well as those physical objects as well. So there's an interesting sutta called Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So there, this mind basically can operate with Dhamma, form, sound, smell, taste and touch. So basically all sorts of objects, mind can take some kind of impression. So its function is somewhat complicated in that sense. So that's why even in the Buddha's answer, that who is going to consume all this? So we are seeing, say, forms through the eyes, we are hearing sounds, we are smelling, tasting, we are going through certain contact and tangibles are there. And who is the one ultimately going to consume all this? So that's the answer. That's a question asked by Unnaba Brahmana from the Buddha.
Yes.
And Buddha's answer is that the mind is the one consuming all. So mind is taking some sort of an impression of all these sense contact, And so ultimately, manayatana is very much like a complicated function involved with.
So even though we are using the word ayatana for the manayatana, it is not made out of the satra mahadhatu.
Yeah, exactly.
It is not rupa.
Exactly.
It is not rupa then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much. That's what I wanted. Because I didn't know how the contact can be made if it is not rupa, if it is only like a substance-less thing like sanya, sankhara. Those are like almost like verbs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, like sankhara is thoughts or thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
But how can the three come together in contact, and how can the, if it's not, now the shabda, you don't think of it as being rupa, but it's shabda rupa, because there are waves made out of tiny, tiny particles, and this is also light particles, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And tastes, all of those are shabda rupa, or it's all, the Buddha has called the word rupa.
Correct.
So I don't understand why the manayatana is also not a rupa. I mean, I understand what you're saying, because of the fact that it takes mind objects too.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the ones made in the eye and the ear and the nose and all that, which is an image.
Mm.
So it deals with mind objects. That means that the manayatana too, like the mind objects, which could be thing major, right? One of the mind objects in when we do Dhammanupassana is that you fall asleep, drowsiness, thina milja.
Correct.
Or Shraddha, those are also dham.
Yes, mental objects.
Because they interact with the manayatana, so then the manayatana too, like those mind objects, is of no rupa. Is that correct then?
We can't say that the manayatana has a rupa, but anyway, certain commentaries are saying. So the mind is sometimes associating the heart, and that kind of different terminologies are there.
I have heard that too.
Yeah, so those terminologies are there. But anyway, I mean, exactly finding the place of the mind, how it is being sort of influenced by the body, and all those things are, you know, certain commentaries are there.
Yes.
Say chitta jarupa, utuja rupa, kamma jarupa. So those are different kinds of origination to the form. So the mind also influences the body. Body also influences the mind. So there's a kind of an interrelationship between the mind and the body. So that's a different story. But our concern has to be more than that. Our concern has to be how to purify the mind.
Yes.
How we can maintain a purified mind. Undefiled mind, unattached mind. So that should be the goal, because otherwise, I mean, we may end up with a kind of a very sophisticated scientific experiment where we are trying to find the exact causes of the mind, and we are going to tabulate it, and we are adding this and that to it. So it might lose our interest towards the liberation. It might lose our interest towards the purification of the mind.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Correct. Yeah.
Ruan Saranai.
Teruan Saranai. Okay.
Bhante,
go ahead.
Is a question. You want me to read it?
Sure, please.
As discussed in the session, the contact of three things, example, eye, visible object, and eye consciousness, seems to be a starting point of building up fetters.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, but in another way, contact of Dhamma, that is talking and hearing, will be used for creating an environment for unfettering the grasping.
Mm-hmm.
Much merits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dhamma here actually has two meanings. The typical Dhamma objects means the mental objects. And their mental objects and the mind are in operation, and it will cause the mind consciousness to happen. But your question is based on the Dhamma, that is the Buddha's teaching. So Buddha's teaching, we are hearing, we are listening, or we are, you know, reading and all that sort of things are happening that actually cause to develop wisdom and take us to a practice, and as you said, ultimately purify the mind. So therefore, in summary, we can say all these things, say the Dhamma, the all these different formations, all these concepts, we have to properly handle, we have to skillfully handle. So if we are able to skillfully handle them, ultimately the mind has to let go of everything. Suppose that we are using certain terms, we are using certain terminologies. Say while walking, I am using left, right, lifting, moving, placing, lifting, moving, placing. So all these are terms, all these are words. It gives us some kind of a understanding. And also while we are practically working on it, we are adding this label. But ultimately, slowly, slowly, as the mind unifies, as the mind concentrates, so that label, that concept also starts fading away, because we understand now its purpose is done. The need, the help that we want to get from that concept is we have taken. Now it's not necessary. We can simply keep it aside. Now we can simply have a very silent mind. We don't need to note. We don't need to label. So likewise, all these terms, all these Dhamma, all these Buddha's teaching ultimately help us to liberate the mind, ultimately help us to free the mind. So that is why Buddha mentioned that kullupamang mo bhikkhave dhamman desissami nittaranatthaya no gahanatthaya. Monks, I am teaching you dhamma like a raft. It is for you to cross over to the other shore, not to keep it, not to bound it, or not to hold it, or not to grasp it. So we are learning the Dhamma, we are, you know, trying to understand the Dhamma, we are using the Dhamma to make the mind more and more purified, more and more freed, and ultimately Dhamma also has to be abandoned. But till we come the fully understanding, so we should not be hurry to abandon the Dhamma, should not be hurry in a rush to abandon the teaching. Once the purpose is completely done, we can abandon that as well. Okay, I think we can conclude Dhamma sermon today, because the answer and the question is also quite related to the end of the sermon. So today is a very nice topic we have to discuss, but it is somewhat difficult. We need to further and further explain about it, or we can further and further investigate about it. Then only we would be able to understand it thoroughly. And whatever the merits that we have accumulated through today's discussion, we will share with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. We will recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bale samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bale samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.